Pie in the Sky Media. This series contains adult language and descriptions of graphic violence throughout. Listener discretion is advised.
We are recording. All right. 3, 2, 1. Hello, and welcome back to another bonus episode of Criminal Mischief with Carolyn and Brandon. I'm the Brandon of that duo, alongside, or not really alongside.
Wonder Twin Powers, yes. Activate.
With the great Carolyn Osorio, who we are lucky enough to have joining us again this week. Carolyn, thank you. Mm-hmm. Welcome. Great to see you. How was your week?
It was great. Busy. Busy.
I hear you have an atmospheric river about to sweep through the great Pacific Northwest. Are you ready to get rained on?
We are ready as always. And you know what? The rain doesn't stop me, baby.
I mean, more than normal. Like, you guys are going to get walloped with these storms.
Yeah, no, I know. And we have a leak in our roof. And so I've been dealing with that. But I feel like we're, you know, it was kind of like...
90 minutes.
Yeah.
90 minutes.
What do you mean 90 minutes?
I would have it fixed in 90 minutes. I haven't even seen it yet, but I could diagnose it and have it fixed in 90 minutes. It's the kind of guy,
you know what?
I am around the house.
It's like wonky where it's like the original log cabin was like from, you know, 1930, I think, because this is the lake that we live on is like a, you know, it was like a summer lake for people, right? And there's like all these crazy additions, and it, so it just looks like the pitch is all, you know, anytime that people come and look at our stuff and they're like, bye.
Wow.
Yeah, have fun with that.
I can imagine. Yeah. Wow, yeah, because all of those little weird addition places where roof lines meet and stuff, that's ripe for leaks.
Yeah. So anyway, so we're battening down the hatches. Good. And a little rain is, as long as our power, see, the big thing for me is if the power goes out.
Yeah.
That's when life really begins to suck, because you live like a pioneer. Yeah. And, you know, everybody runs to Starbucks.
Do you have any like generator power or anything?
You know, we have, you know, it's kind of like we've always talked about it, but there's always something else that comes up that we just, and then it's kind of like, okay, well, anyway, I don't want to get into the whole thing. Our house is not your traditional house where you can just have it somewhere tucked away. Right. Like it would be, what, let me guess, you have a generator?
No, I don't. I want to get one though. I totally want to get one.
I know.
Yeah.
So it's like a heat pump. Like I've talked to my husband. I'm like, let's just do it.
Right.
And then there's always some other thing that we want to do. Like, no, let's just go on vacation.
Sure.
Let's,
no, of course. My years ago, my grandparents on my dad's side, they live up in New Hampshire. And my grandfather, when they built this new house, he like thought of everything and had backup power and had generators and had everything. So you flip a switch if the power was out. 30 years, never used it. The thing just sat there gathering dust. Okay. And was, by the time he died, it was a dinosaur of a machine, right? It had been, there are 30 different iterations of a better version of this. Okay. And so it was just sitting there. And so my grandmother just parted it out and sold it. Right. Sold all the different components of it and said, we've never used it. We're never going to need it. That winter, they had a series of blizzards. Power was out for like 6 fucking weeks. It was down to like 7 degrees. And here's this little old lady. Right. And so my dad had to go up there and had to get her into a hotel and had to do all of this kind of stuff. And he's like, what about the generator, Ma? She goes, I may have been a little rash with that decision by like getting rid of
everything. Oh my gosh. My grandpa's like rattling chains.
Exactly.
Like that one.
Why did you get rid of my generator?
I 30 years I've been waiting for this moment.
Right. But now with with Tesla and getting the Powerwall and all of that, like if we get the panels on the roof, the solar panels on the roof, because like all of our neighbors have them, right? I'm like trying to keep up with the Joneses here in my neighborhood, because they all walk by going, had a negative power bill again this month, asshole. I'm feeding the grid. Like, okay.
That would drive me insane. Right? That would drive me insane.
It drives me nuts, but they're right. They do. They actually add power to the grid and they get credits on their electric bill. So gosh, do that.
That's so funny because that is like so not the way Seattleites work, where everybody would just be like silently judging you. You know, you've probably heard of the Seattle Freeze. You know, they'd have their little stickers on or something, or like they'd have a certain keychain that everybody but us would have, you know, and we'd be the type of person that we're like, we don't fucking want the keychain, okay?
Yeah, of course. You shove that keychain up your ass, right? Come on.
Of course.
But so, you know, we have one car that's a hybrid, so we might, I don't know. We might do it.
These are really first world problems.
Living in Los Angeles, in California, there are so many incentives to get, like, it basically, they're not lying when they say it'll cost you nothing to do it. It's just, do you want to pull the trigger on it? And do you really trust that, you know, but there are enough of my neighbors that have done it successfully. And they're like, yeah, no, it's great.
No, I actually love any kind of environmental, if we could do it on our house, I would do it in a second. I mean, I love that. And then you're not dependent on, you know, if the power goes out, like you're good.
Yeah. And our house is perfect for it. We've got this huge, just sloping roof on both sides. It's like a ranch style house, east facing. We get the morning sun all day, and then we just get beat up by the late afternoon sun. And it's, but anyway, okay. So I purposely didn't Google this case all week because I wanted to be surprised because I knew nothing about it. Mm-hmm. And I would have lost every bet that I made on what actually happened with this. I would have lost every bet.
Well, you tell me what you thought was going to happen.
I thought,
what did you, that Victor, create a little brain come up with?
I thought that Victor the vampire was just a persona that he kind of created to look cool in front of his girlfriend, that there wasn't a real Victor, and that plan B was just pie in the sky, okay? That there was no way that they were going to have the balls, that this kid was not going to do it, right? And that she was going to fall back into the kind of controlling mother kind of syndrome and not be able to go through with it. Right. Even if he kind of manned up and's like, yeah, I'm coming over, I'm going to kill her. She would have ripcorded and said, nope. Let's go to plan C or come up with a whole nother plan with different letters that aren't as confusing. Okay. So that's what I thought was going to happen up until the point in the narration where you're saying, and was stabbing her while straddling her back. I still didn't think it was going to happen until then. It was really weird. It was really, really strange because, I mean, it's, and I'm, this is just a crazy, just opinion, I guess, maybe, or belief, is that murder is such a grown-up adult thing, right? It's like a grown-up decision to make. It requires a certain amount of physical strength. It requires a certain amount of planning, unless, of course, it's a crime of passion and whatever. Okay, yes. But like again, not to belabor the point here with Tommy Sullivan, but he was a 14-year-old kid, and he planned it meticulously because he might not have been strong enough because he was only 14, right?
For everybody who doesn't know, but you should know, Brandon's referring to The Devil Within. He's got a new season coming out, season 3, but that is the very first season.
Correct.
Was with
correct
Tommy Sullivan in season 1.
And all of this is to say that these two people, Go to John and Gypsy Rose, regardless of how old they actually were, they seemed like kids to me, right?
Yeah.
They seemed like kids, especially, even worse, they seemed like kids playing dress up. You know, like with Go to John's list of like rules in the house, they were so sophomoric, like no clothes, obviously, unless it's sexy. Right.
But you know what? It became adult very quickly. Like I could only read the first 3, like the other ones as they went down the line, I could not.
Oh, really?
I read them, but they were very, very adult.
Like Red Room, like what's those series of books?
No, very sexual.
Right, with you know, very, what are those books with Christian Steele, with Anastasia?
Are these romance books?
Why do you think they were
huge. It was I have no idea.
Phenomenon. It became 50 Shades of Grey. 50 Shades of Grey.
You know what? Okay. I've never seen the movie. I've never read the book.
Okay. So they were very like, it was BDSM. He had all of these rules. He had the contract, you know, that she had to sign, like all of that kind of stuff.
I think that that's why I started off the episodes as I did, because the sex was a huge component in this. I don't care what anybody has to say about it, because they were in their own worlds together. And it became, I think that, you know, I don't want to get to how we feel about Gypsy, because I feel like it's too premature to have that conversation about it. But I think that she was just as into him as he was into her.
Agreed.
And I think that, you know, it became like that fantasy. I mean, she even called herself, like in the documents I got from the police, her return bus ticket was Bella Godejohn was in the name.
Wow.
Like Bella from, I mean, I don't know if this is.
So like she married the beast.
Right. She married her, what was the guy's name again? In
it was Beauty and the Beast. It was Bella, right? Belle was Beauty and the Beast.
Belle.
Sorry.
And so that would have been Beauty and the Beast. She used Bella. And I have to wonder if it's a nod to Twilight.
Oh, of course. That's Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart's character.
What I'm saying. And I mean, just the whole idea that
But isn't that childish?
Wait a second. The whole idea that he was like, you need to stay in the bathroom because I don't know if I'm going to.
When I might kill you too. She's like, titillating.
But wait a second. When I watched those clips, when I got the first clip in the first episode, I forgot that when they first met in the movie, she walks into the class and Edward just kind of is like, he's going to throw up. And what it is that he's so into her blood that he... that he cannot, like, she interprets it as like, oh, he doesn't like me. And he's really like, I want to, like, devour her, you know? So I'm sure that there had to have been that, right?
Right, but you're making my point. Doesn't that seem so childish?
Yes!
It's so sophomoric. Yes! And then so for them to go in together on a murder... That's why I didn't think that it was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, believe me, I hear you. And I'm just saying that I think that the whole, you know, raging hormones that we talked about and like it had to have played such a huge role in that they were in it together, the Thelma and Louise, the, you know, and of course she obviously wanted to escape this underlying point is that she felt like she needed to escape this mother who was inescapable, you know? So she had every reason to want to get her gone. The thing is that why did he do it? You know, why did he do it?
Well, I have a couple things about that, but first, so she was what, 20?
She was 23.
23 when this happened. And was he older
than
her?
She thought that she was 19.
Right, but she was actually 23.
She was actually 23. He was 26.
Okay, so all of that raging hormone stuff was about 5-6 years too late, right?
I don't think that's true, because I think they were both arrested in development. Because she, you gotta remember, she wasn't able to do any of that stuff when other teenagers would normally be doing it. You know, she was stuck in a wheelchair at home with her mom.
Yeah, she had a lot of making up to do. That's a good point.
And he did too. I don't think he had much going on before her either, you know?
Oh, Victor the Vampire, he pulls chicks, first of all. It's just, let's put that to bed right now. Put that to bed right now. He protects them by locking them in the bathroom in case his bloodlust is uncontrollable. And you're fucking next. I might love you, but you're next.
I know, but just imagine how powerful that is. Like, and she bought into it. Like, oh my gosh, yes.
I mean,
right? Right?
It just seems like a 15, 16-year-old girl's like fantasy, you know, who...
Right, because she never got to be a 15 right, or 16-year-old.
And that's what I... That's the missing piece here in my kind of thesis, is that arrested development. When you said that, that kind of clicked in. Like, okay, she probably is more than 5 or 6 years behind emotionally or in terms of like relationship experience or whatever. She had zero. All she had were these raging, beautiful, romantic, savage kind of stories in her head about what love actually is, you know? And she found a partner who said that he was a fucking vampire. She's like, oh, well, this is perfect. Because one of the greatest love stories of her life was in Twilight.
Well, and here's another component to it too, is that everything she's seeing is through the lens of the internet. That's the only time that she can, and everything's so amped up on the internet. Like everything is like fantasy, you know, it's not even like social media stuff being real.
Yeah. It's all fake.
It's all fake. But she didn't know that because she hadn't been out in the real world, you know, without her mother constantly like over her shoulder, literally holding her hand, holding a stuffed animal. You know, like, so everything she's gotten is through Disney, through these movies, you know, through the internet that she's like, you know, finding out, you know, Googling at night by herself.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, she doesn't have girlfriends that she can talk to.
Wow. I have a weird take, and I hope I don't offend anybody or get myself in trouble here, but I'm obviously, listen, she didn't deserve to get murdered. She did not deserve to get murdered. I just want to say that right now. And there's a big part of me that for the reason that I'm upset that she got murdered was because I wanted her to be exposed for what she did to her daughter publicly and be punished for that. Right. Mm-hmm. Because that's, it's such a, I mean, inconceivable way to treat your own offspring, you know? Do I think she deserved to be murdered? Again, of course not. Of course not. But I think she deserved to be punished for that, for you know, the just reckless child abuse for years and years and years and years for personal gain, you know? Or, okay, maybe being punished is a little too harsh, but get treatment at least, because obviously it was something going on. She had a screw loose up there. That's not a technical term, screw loose.
I think that people who listen to the show know that that's your technical term, yes.
They know what I mean. I
think it's funny how you like to protect yourself. Like, I know if anybody didn't know, I know this isn't a technical term, but it fucking should be.
It totally should be. It would make things a lot easier to communicate.
I mean, I think that
half a whack job is what we'd say in New Jersey.
Would she even, like, what would exposure be to her, to the mom who did this?
I think it would be less for her and more for awareness, you know?
Right, but I'm just saying, like, would she even have had any contrition or, like, what would she do if she was exposed? Because, like, for most of us, I think that we would take being murdered, and I don't want to knock on wood, I don't even want to put that energy out there, than to actually ever cause this kind of harm to your child.
No, I hear you. I mean, and you're right, it's a really good point, how exposure would affect her. Cause I don't think there would be contrition. And if there were, I probably wouldn't believe it because she's just a hustler at heart. Right.
Right. She'd figure out a way to manipulate it into
victimhood
somehow.
Victimhood.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause that's what I was actually thinking of her personality this week. Like, I don't know if you ever saw this episode of the X-Files where there was this creature that it was like a human form, but he absorbed people's pain and anger and sadness and frustration, you know, he fed off of it. That was kind of like that. And Scully and Mulder had to go figure it out. Right.
Wow.
And I feel like this is what she was, you know, a being that like got energized and got her self-worth and everything on the heels of her daughter being absolutely treated like crap, getting these surgeries she didn't need, you know, but it fed her, right? Hurting her own daughter fed her.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's just a reverse kind of idea of love and feeling good about oneself. Like it's just, it's so beyond the pale, you know? You know, we talked about Crime and Punishment. We've talked about that a lot. Yeah. Like, you know, and is it fair that Gypsy gets 10 years and, you know, Nicholas is going to be in prison for the rest of his life with no possibility of parole? You know, what do you,
I don't know. I honestly don't know. There's two very distinct paths that I could take here. One of them is that she had been manipulated her entire life. So it was easy for her to be manipulated again by a forceful entity that she respected or loved or feared or wanted, you know, approval from or whatever. Okay. So she was just ripe and ready to be manipulated. Okay. She also grew up with a hustler, knowing in her heart that I can walk, I can do shit. Don't answer the question if they ask about your legs. Stroke this fucking stuffed animal and fucking be sad and right, like all that shit. Right. So she knew how to play the fucking game. So
absolutely.
So that's the other part of me. Did she play like the victim card? Like, I'm a victim before, I'm a victim again. I loved him. I loved my mom. She did this. I loved him. He made me do this. I honestly could be convinced either way.
Well, and like, who was hustling who? Like, was Gypsy hustling him or was Nick?
Oh, gosh.
I mean, it's like, you know, that's the thing. And the I think the difference here, though, is that Gypsy's background, the mitigating circumstances, absolutely. I feel like, you know, she is a true victim. But Nick Godejohn, you know, he did not grow up in this abusive, you know, family life, at least not to my knowledge, and it doesn't sound like it at all. And he went ahead with this. And if you could say that he was manipulated by Gypsy, well, then I think in a previous episode, you know, you said something about somebody we were talking about, and I can't remember which episode it was, but it was very on point, I think, and made me think where if somebody is this easily manipulated, you know, they don't deserve to walk around with the rest of us. And it just is kind of like, you know, it's scary to think about it. Like, you know, there's people that given a certain set of circumstances will do horrible things, you know?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting take that if she was the master manipulator this whole time and knew she needed to get rid of her mom and set up this Godejohn dude, but you know, it would really be hard to unpack that because the ferocity of her love and attraction seemed really genuine. Okay.
It did.
Of what
I
she
agree.
Was she'd been denied for so long all through those hormonal years from her teens up into her fucking 20s, okay? Just wanting to be a sexual being and wanting to experience that and be a woman and be attracted and be attractive to somebody, right? Like, that's such a huge part of our existence, you know? And so to jump into that, I don't blame her. But that doesn't also mean that at the same time, she was fucking playing chess to go to John's fucking, you know, vampire marbles, right? And just add him like on around her finger, you know, and could just, you know, almost like she like incepted him, like planted the idea, hey, we should kill my mom. So then it's his idea all of a sudden, you know, and he plans the whole thing. She's like, oh, my hero, don't kill me too, raging bloodlusty monster, right? And he's like, yeah, you better stay in the fucking bathroom, take your damn clothes off, I'm gonna go kill, you know. And it worked. What a perfect crime, if that's the truth, right?
I mean, I definitely think that she was living with a master manipulator. And I really hope that, and I'm sure she is getting therapy. Because I do think that she, like when she, during his trial, you know, I felt like she was being incredibly honest and was just like, she wasn't trying to throw him under the bus and she was just wanting to tell the truth. And I think that, you know, when you are raised like that, I feel like she felt like a prisoner and she just wanted to escape, but didn't have the tools to know what to do or where to turn. And it's so tragic, the thing about her dad, you know, where it's like she had no idea that this entire family line wanted to be in her life. Yeah. You know,
and the dad didn't.
And then to find,
imagine, you know, her dad finding out that his daughter didn't have all of these illnesses. How fucking relieved as a parent he was that his daughter's got a clean bill of health, but then like all the years lost, just the years lost of being in his daughter's life. Like that must be brutal. What do you think about the 10-year sentence for Gypsy?
I mean, part of me felt like it was harsh, but then another part of me felt like it was fair. But then another part of me felt like, you know, when you juxtapose that to Nicholas Gotajohn, like I feel like Gypsy was a complete victim, and you know, my heart goes out to her, and I just feel like, you know, at the end of the day, I think she is a really good person, but I do think that, you know, it's such a wacky situation, unbelievable situation.
She wanted her mother dead. They had the plan together. Plan B existed with her in agreement. She never denied that. She didn't say he forced Plan B on me. Our Plan B was killing my mom. So there was a part of her that wanted her mom dead.
I know, and that's why I feel conflicted by it all the time. I mean, I don't have a clear cut answer for you. Like
same. I don't either.
I part of me feels like, oh my gosh, 10 years. She's already been 23 years in this wheelchair of prison. Right? Yeah. 23, almost a quarter of a century. Yeah. And all of her life, she has been a prisoner. And now she spends 10 more years behind bars as a prisoner.
She gets out in like 2 weeks, right?
She does. And she would say, I have felt more free in prison because I can be a woman. And that's her terms. She said, a woman, because she is one. You know, she is a woman and has been for quite a long time.
Are there
time.
Pictures of her now in prison? Can we see what she looks like?
Yeah. Really? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's Google that. Maybe I'll put a link in the description of the show. Mm-hmm. Here's what Gypsy Rose looks like. Wonder what she's going to do when she gets out.
You know, I think that she'll probably be like an advocate for Munchausen by proxy. I mean, I can see her doing a lot of really good work, and I hope that that's where it goes. And I hope that she's gotten, you know, therapy too, because, you know, when you are raised a certain way and with the manipulator like this, you can't help but be like a total manipulator. I mean, it's second nature. You can see her leaning into it during that interview when they were first talking to her. I mean, she went into it like a duck to water, like a little birdie, like flying out of the nest and instantly knowing how to fly. Like she was like, you know, did the whole thing. Well, we were in, you know, we lost our pay. We're Hurricane Katrina survivors and we don't have my birth certificate. Right. And she just like went into the whole entire thing. It was like nothing to her. It was like, so I just think that, you know, you need to work through that kind of toxic parenting that she received from her mother. And I think that she'll be able to do good in the world if she chooses to do that.
All right. Two things. Did you watch the whole Dr. Phil interview with her? What was his take? Did he press her at all? Or was he like, oh, you poor victim?
I didn't watch the entire interview, but I feel like, I think with most people, my sense was the way that he was talking to her was kind of hardball because of that, you know, she can't, how do you walk that back? You know, the brownie thing,
you know, the day after her mom's dead. Yeah. Like the next day. Yeah. And
yeah,
and he's whacked like, up, and makes all these Facebook posts. Yeah.
Right. And you know, she can't hide behind being a little girl. This is a hotel room. She's 23. She's absolutely on board with all of it, you know? Yeah. And so, which is fine. You know, she should be able to do that if she hadn't just been a part of killing her mother.
Of course. If it was a regular 23-year-old, you'd be like, who gives a shit? Leave him alone. Right. But they had just conspired to murder her mother. So last question that I have for you, what do you think about Gotajohn with life without parole? Was there a psych evaluation? Like, is he mentally okay to understand it with his alleged multiple personality, all this vampire nonsense?
He had been diagnosed the police interview that I heard with his mother, he'd been diagnosed with autism. And so they were trying to you know, make that a part of the trial. Which I think is a relevant point, not because, you know, autism, if you have autism, that you're going to be susceptible to killing someone. Not at all. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, you know, you need to look at the full picture when you're putting someone behind bars.
That's a piece of the puzzle. It is. That's definitely a piece of the puzzle.
Yes. And I also think that, you know, he's been trying to get a new trial, and that there was all, you know, I think that his interview with the police has like over a million downloads. And so did he really get a fair trial? If you listen to his interview, you know, I think that, you know, he's very, I don't know if it shows him in the best light possible. We couldn't use a lot of the audio because, unfortunately, as Brandon pointed out, it was
dog shit. Really
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's why I know I can always keep I can always be real. My head never inflates when I talk to you, ever.
It's not your fault that the audio was dog shit. You didn't record it. Did you record it? Kidding.
I'm about ready to get beat.
You stay in the goddamn bathroom. You lock the door.
Okay. Don't drink my blood.
I might not be able to help myself.
Unless you really be careful. Oh my gosh, then we could be vampires together. Oh my gosh. No. Okay. So I'm just saying that I feel conflicted because if he could be manipulated in this way to do this, to your point from a previous episode, which I've been thinking about, was this a one-time thing that it just so happened that, because we've talked about this before in previous episodes where it's like, we're both the type of people where I think that we could have gone right instead of left and had completely different lives.
Yeah.
And we're both very happy with the lives that we are so fortunate to have. You know, you separately, obviously, me separately, you know, we have loving families. And I think that it could have gone with a lot of people, you know, you could have hooked up with the wrong guy or whatever. And then your life is completely different. And they're just the perfect person to manipulate you into doing stuff. It wouldn't be murder, but it would just be like losing yourself and your identity and just becoming, you know, not your best self. So I think that I don't know how I feel about him because I do think he was absolutely madly in love with her. And I believe that had he not met her, he would have never killed anybody.
I don't know. I got to be honest, because it takes a certain type of mentality. It takes a certain type of ruthlessness that I've never met in my life. And I don't want to stand over a completely defenseless sleeping woman and stab her 17 times in the back.
Right. But we've already talked about how they were very immature about their ideas of, in their minds, she was a villain.
Right. I get it. But with everybody that I've ever met, and I hope to ever meet in my life, there's a firewall. There's a failsafe. There's a fucking emotional governor, something that at the moment you're like, I'm not a murderer. I don't care how much I love this girl that I'm forcing to stay in the bathroom naked right now. I'm sorry. I don't care how great I think the fake rape sex is going to be in 10 minutes after I kill her. I'm not a murderer. So we got to rethink plan B. And something in him drove right through those red flags and just boom, and started plunging that knife, right?
I know. And I agree. That's why I was bringing up a previous episode where, you know, you had brought up a really great point about if somebody's capable of doing that, you know, they don't deserve to be out there with the rest of us, right? I think that's a direct quote, because it's like, yeah, you're right. If somebody doesn't have those fail safes, that internal check of like, hey, you know, maybe I shouldn't have, you know, gone to this party because he said I should go or whatever. Like, okay, that's one thing. But actually, like, murdering a defenseless person who's sleeping and doing so and having fantasies about raping their, I mean, that was real. He said that was one of the conditions. So yeah, you're right. And having that be the case, then, you know, I guess he got what he deserved.
Yeah, I guess so too.
It's just that because we know what the mom was.
Right.
You know, like.
The most interesting thing of all of this to me is when you said, was she really the master manipulator? allowing him to believe that she was being manipulated and that she was buying his line of vampire bullshit, right? Like, if she wasn't buying it, but was pretending she was, all in an effort to get him to murder her mom, and she's like, I'll roll the dice and maybe do a little piece of time on it, and then I'm free. Whew, that's fucking diabolical.
But I don't think that's true, because she,
I don't think it is either, but I want it to be true. That's the interesting
part. I know. Because that's what we do. We want to make these people.
Well, because it would be Shakespearean, right?
The engineer hoist
on his own petard, right? If the woman who was manipulating her gave her the tools to be able to manipulate her instead and get her killed.
I know, but if we were actually watching this as a movie, we would want the mom to be killed because of how
100%.
Horrible. Because of how, oh, I know. Fuck, with yeah. The feeding tube and all of that. Like, we would be doing it ourselves.
Oh,
and
that's, I can't even. Oh, gosh.
That's the difference between fantasy, because we know it's fantasy and we're watching a movie and we can get all like into it because we know it's not real. And these guys made it real. They wanted the fantasy. They wanted to do this role-playing BDSM, you know, Twilight, all that stuff, and they made it real. And maybe that's what they needed, or what Gypsy needed, to pull the trigger and have him do this for her.
Wow. All right. Well, very disturbing episode. I'm glad I didn't Google it. I'm glad I was able to learn and figure it all out along with the audience this week. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So thank you again for dropping by and spending time with us today. We appreciate all of our listeners. Thank you very much.
Criminal Mischief Nation.
Criminal Mischief Nation. Please consider supporting the great companies that support our show, because without them and without you, it would just be Carolyn and I making bad jokes and her getting mad at me. So we appreciate it, and I would appreciate you checking out The Devil Within. New season drops on Wednesday the 6th, first episode of a 6-episode series, and then there'll be more, some bonus episodes after that. So I'd appreciate you checking it out, and I think we might have a sneak peek, or we might the episode will be out there, so it won't really be a sneak peek, but we're going to be highlighting episode 1 on next week's episode. Is that true?
Yes, that is true. You guys have to check out. We're going to make you check out whether you want to or not.
It might be worth it. Maybe we do, since episode 1 will already be out, do we maybe do a little preview of 2?
Yeah, whatever you want to do. The it's such a great show, and I think that let's maybe do episode 1, and then maybe, I don't know, we'll surprise you guys, we'll
ask the network brass too and see what they want to do, but either way, we're going to be doing a little cross promotion here, which is something that Carolyn and I have always talked about being able to do with our respective projects and with the projects that we do together, and we're lucky enough through a lot of hard work to get to a point now where we're able to do stuff like that. So I'm very grateful for the relationship. So hope you enjoy what we've been doing, and hope you stick around. So thank you very much. Please give us a rate and a review over at Apple Podcasts if you get a chance. Tell your friends about it. It helps out more than you know. Carolyn, anything you'd like to add?
Nope. Until next time.
Stay safe out there.
From Cloud 10, Criminal Mischief is a pie in the sky production, recorded in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We're produced by Brandon Morgan and myself, music by Soundstripe. I'm Carolyn Osorio, your writer and host.
Hello, the world. We are They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I'm Courtney Eck.
And I'm Sadie Eck. And we are sisters that want to tell you about lesser known murders.
Our cases are always compelling, maybe even a little scary, with just enough banter to keep it interesting.
You can find us at theywillkill.com
or anywhere you listen to podcasts. See you there.
See ya.